Okay. Well, thank you for inviting me to present here. So I'm with the Florida Department of Health. I'm working on the Sun project. But if you have a little bit of time at the margin also, so you can do some other interesting analysis, and that's what I have been doing. Because we get some questions. And so one of the things is I start with the background. And what the problem is that in 2013 we started to see an increase in gonorrhea and HIV again, while the numbers have gone down for a few years. In 2014, that trend has pretty much continued, especially for HIV, maybe not necessarily for gonorrhea. But we also saw a steady increase in the number of HIV gonorrhea co-infections. They increased from 17% just from 2012 to 2013, and more than 45% for since 2007, which are very, very large numbers. And so it might be very helpful to have a little bit of a better idea what's going on actually, because this yes, we see that, but what's going on there? And so one of the big questions that is open when you start looking in the literature is, yeah, we know that about 5% or 4 to 5% of the new gonorrhea infections have already HIV, but those temporal dynamics over time of those co-infections have not really been properly documented. And it's often also very difficult, because if you want to know, hey, what happens over a period of 6, 5, 6, 7 years, and you have a cohort and you start with a decent sized cohort, by the time you're 6 years further, your sample size is so small that it's very hard to do something with it. And therefore, I think ideally what you want to use is multi-year data, not just a single one-year cohort, but much more larger amount of data, so that you can actually get a feeling of those co-infection rates and how those change. And for that reason, once you have a lot of that data, disease reporting databases for systematic surveillance can actually be very useful for it. The problem is that the data in that is not necessarily very nice and clean. It's also over a long period sampled, so it's not, you can apply very easily your standard techniques on it. So in Florida, we have PRISM, that is the Patient Reporting Investigation Surveillance Manager. I do not think many people know that name. Everybody knows this PRISM. And we have used that since 2007. And so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to use the data from 2007 to 2013 as reported in PRISM to examine what actually is the temporal dynamics between gonorrhea and HIV diagnoses, and a little bit on how these patterns change over time. So the source of the records, I have two sources, basically gonorrhea that comes out of PRISM, and then I have HIV data. So once a week we get a copy of the eHarsh database that we use in the PRISM database to kind of do for matching, for people to see if people have been diagnosed with HIV prior in eHarsh and that kind of things. And so I have those two things in the same place. We asked also nicely permission from the HIV people. That's where Becky Craig is on it. And then what we then did is we did sequential matching of eHarsh records with the PRISM data, because there's two separate systems, so I don't they don't have the same identifiers or anything like that. I have to just use sequential matching. So at first, basically, if there was an eHarsh ID stored in PRISM that was linked because people had done it before, I just used that. I assumed that it was right. That is most of the time, not always, but most of the time. If not, and there was a social security number that was the same, not the alternate security number, only the original, I matched that. The alternate is more often wrong. And if there was no match on that, I would also try using full name and date of birth. And that would give me a very decent number of matches in this story. Now, then I have to determine, hey, do we have a co-infection, co-diagnosis? And that is basically the time between infections. So what I did is I took the oldest record in PRISM for gonorrhea, plus the oldest record in either PRISM or eHarsh for HIV, and calculated the difference in month. I'm using month on purpose, and you will see that in a little bit. It would be easier to use years, of course, because you have nice bigger cohorts. But Mons will give you much more finer detail about what's going on and actually gives you much more insight of what's happening. So after all the matching what I did, I had 2,871 individuals that were diagnosed with both diseases over those 7 years from 2007 to 2013. And what I then did was I had to determine, okay, what is a prior cholera infection? And I basically said, okay, anything more than 6 months before an HIV infection. And the reason is that there's a window before you actually can diagnose HIV. So you don't know if they have HIV in this time already or it was a co-infection. And then on the other end, it was basically for more than 60 days. And that is what we would call a concurrent cholera infection. Prior to that, it's a prior, and after more than 60 days after, it will be a subsequent GC infection. And of those 2,900 people, what you can see is about just over 1,000 have a GC infection before they get HIV, about another 1,000 have it afterwards, and about 800 somewhere have in the middle where they have a concurrent infection going on. Now, I think this is a very worrisome number to start with, because that basically means that all these people still were having unprotected sex while they have HIV. But keep also in mind, this is basically up to 7 years of time frame. So, so this is all really nice to have this. But the question then becomes is really what is your relative risk? Because sure, we have this, but how does it compare to basically people just getting HIV? Do they have an increased risk? Is it a reduced risk? You don't know, because it might still be that this is a high number, but at the same time that your normal risk is so much higher that it actually is the relative risk is lower. And because I couldn't use the normal standard relative risk calculations, so what I did is I just took it basically, what does it mean? It is basically the risk that you get HIV when you have already gonorrhea compared to what is the risk that you get HIV when you do not have gonorrhea. And so I took my gonorrhea cohort and for each month, and I calculated the number of people that would get gotten HIV in it compared to divided by the number of people that did not, and do the same thing for the whole population with HIV. And this will give you a relative risk for each specific month since over the time frame that you have. So if, and then we'll
slow down. I sometimes have to remind myself to slow down because I go too fast.
There are basically two parts, above the line and below the line. And above the line, this is the likelihood of an HIV infection when you got infected in January 2007. So this is the likelihood that I get an HIV infection over those years, when I had my HIV infection in January 2007. And that's about 1.4%. And of course it goes down because your time frame that you have is getting shorter after that. So these people have only a very short time frame, but they still already have about a 0.5 increased risk of a likelihood of getting an HIV infection. Now you can do the same thing for the whole population with getting HIV, and that is pretty much a straight line, it's a little bit curvier. But the interesting thing happens when you divide the two of them, because that's where you get your relative risk. And what you then see is that your relative risk is very low for the people that were in January 2007. Your relative risk for each month after that to get HIV is very, very low. And of course this goes up when you get to the end and you end up very high, because that's where you have your co-infections. Now, this will tell you that you basically have, over your whole time frame, you have an increased risk of getting HIV. But then the question really became, once we saw this, is okay, but is this relative risk only because you had a very high risk here in the beginning, or is it basically still elevated?
This is the same one when you go the other way around. You get a similar pattern. Well, this is the relative risk of acquiring gonorrhea after HIV. You still have definitely an increased risk over your whole time frame. And this, but the same question arises there. And so to tackle that, I went into and say, okay, what I really want to know for each month since my infection, what is the risk, what is my infection rate, what is my incidence rate for that for 1 month after, 2 months after, 3 months after, 4 months after, for people who have gotten an infection. And so that is what this formula will do. The problem is that because you have, in 2007, you have basically 7 years. Later on, you only have a few years. So what you have to do is use a kind of grid. And when you do this calculation, because I have 5 minutes, I can explain the details later if anybody's really interested in the details. But this will give you the incidence rate over time since initial infection. And this is a logarithmic scale because this one goes up so high. And what I put in there is also the HIV incidence rate for 2013 and the gonorrhea incidence rate for 2013. And what you see is that only in the very, very short period, just directly after the initial infection, you have an increased risk, and it's pretty much a co-infections. And after that, it drops below the average for the whole state. What basically suggests that you might have actually have an effect. Now, the problem is that you have also age, people get older and they get less sexually active, so you would expect that to happen anyway. And but over time, the risk actually becomes lower and goes below the risk. And so just looking in two different ways at it, you get kind of real different perspective of it. But I think this is the most interesting one of all of those. Now, so what is the future work that I was planning on doing before I decided to leave DOH is to extend this to all sexual transmitted diseases, including repeat infections with an EC disease, because you can use the same technique for it. Compare the influence of intervention. I can, for example, split the group in who have been interviewed and have not been interviewed and see if, for example, interviewing a person actually makes a difference. Because I would get two different lines here that are in different heights from each other. And then you can, of course, use anything that you want, gender, sexual orientations, public, private, provider, pregnancy status, whatever you might be interested in, you can investigate in the same way if there's differences between that. So, conclusions. Individuals diagnosed with HIV or gonorrhea have an elevated risk for gonorrhea or HIV compared to individuals without a prior diagnosis. The post-infection incidence rate drops substantially with time, and the persistence of post-infection diagnosis suggests that unsafe sexual practices may persist for at least 7 years after diagnosis with HIV. And kind of the recommendation is that we should still keep in mind that people with STDs should not, the counseling of those clients should not be immediately after the last diagnosis, but this should be extended to any people with a prior STD or HIV diagnosis, regardless of how much time there was before, since the last diagnosis. Thank you. Any questions?
Great, thank you. Yeah, we have time for a couple questions.
My name is Lisa Lane from Ohio. We did a similar assessment, but we looked at syphilis and came to some similar conclusions. But I was curious, what challenges did you encounter between trying to match or link the two data in terms of defining your population on the study? But as you were saying, you know, I know in one the ID number is not the same, so what did you do to try to really refine
Well, what often happens is that people would either say, hey, we have a field record in PRISM for HIV, and we use that, the oldest one, I mean, EMRS-ID. And one of the things I did is I actually also used social security number as a second way to match that, and date of birth and name as a second layer on top of that. Beyond that, it becomes a kind of really much more
difficult to do, because then you have to kind of start thinking about sound edge. You might say, hey, maybe names are switched around. What is, then you get more in probabilistic matching, what would be possible to do, but also a little bit more complex to really do properly. So what is your goal? For us, the goal was really to get a feel for what's going on. And the way that we did it here, I think this was good enough for it, the data. If you really want to know and you want to have everybody match, I think you really want to get more into an MPI system where you have a master person index, have both systems in there, you have all everything deduplicated and everything matched up properly, and then you should be fine. And so, but that's one of the things I think, if you really, really want to do kind of really more across diseases studies, you really want to think about, you need a single table in the line somewhere that is your profiles, your people, your clients. And once you have that and link that into that, then it becomes really easy to do these kind of studies and much more, and a much bigger scale.